Radio News.
Diplomacy can't survive without confidentiality and without trust.
The British ambassador to the US weighs in on WikiLeaks. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for November 30th, 2010. I'm Madeline Cinto. Teachers and school employees are protesting outside of the LA Unified School District headquarters, where school board members are meeting right now. School employees are rallying against budget cuts, teacher layoffs, and furloughs. Annenberg Radio News' Ariel Edwards-Levy is there. Hello, Ariel.
Hi, Madeline.
So tell us, what's going on over there?
Well, the school board meeting is still going on, but outside, the entire block is being taken up by protesters from the UTLA, the Teamsters, and other unions. And they're waving signs and they're chanting, no ifs, no buts, no education cuts. But as it stands right now, nearly 1,000 people, 996, are going to be having their last day of work today. That's cafeteria workers, bus drivers, building safety inspectors, janitorial and clerical staff. And one UTLA member who I talked to said that that means that come tomorrow, schools are going to be dirtier, people aren't going to be answering phones. They're hoping to see these cuts restored, but it isn't looking likely.
So LAUSD is saying they don't have the money to meet the demands. What are the protesters saying to that?
Well, the members I've talked to have several suggestions about what to do about the budget cuts. Some have said that there should be less spent on the LAUSD bureaucracy. Some have said less should be spent on charter schools and other endeavors like that. But one of the big bones of contention is the federal stimulus jobs bill, $103 million. The board says that that's for next year to help pay off California's $25 billion deficit and get us through the next school year. But the LAUSD, the UTLA members would like to see that being used right now.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Ariel.
Thank you.
California has the nation's largest prison population, with 1.4 million inmates. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court took up the issue of whether California must reduce its prison population by more than 100,000. A lower court ordered the state to relieve prison overcrowding because of health concerns. Last year, there was an average of nearly one death a week in the state prison system. California would make cuts by releasing prisoners early. The state argues the move will make California streets more dangerous. The high court's decision on the case is expected sometime in the summer. Los Angeles was the first stop for Kamala Harris, California's new attorney general. It took almost 4 weeks to determine the winner, but in the end, Harris defeated L.A. District Attorney Steve Cooley. Her 14-point lead in Los Angeles pushed her to the final victory. As Marilyn Medawar reports, Harris appeared today at a downtown Los Angeles hotel.
To the sounds of loud applause, newly elected Attorney General Kamala Harris walked into the Emerald Room at the Millennium Biltmore Hotel. Her supporters were waiting in anticipation. Some had brought flowers, others were snapping pictures. Harris thanked everyone for their support, and with a voice breaking with emotion, she said she was humbled and she pledged to represent the whole of California.
It means people from Los Angeles to San Francisco. It means all of the folks who live in urban, suburban, and rural communities of this state who deserve to be seen, to have their voices heard, and to have power for their voice in terms of this important office, and I pledge to represent each and every one of those communities.
Harris took nearly a month to declare victory. She said her new position comes with a huge responsibility. She spoke of California's revolving door of crime and said it has to be closed.
In California, on an annual basis, we release 120,000 prisoners because they have served their time. Within 3 years of their release, 70% reoffend. It is the highest recidivism rate in the country. It is a system that is failing us and therefore crying out for reform.
Harris also said the Office of the Attorney General will fight for equal civil rights for the people of California.
And doing that in a way that is always about fighting for equality for all people, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation, or religious belief.
When asked how she felt about being the first woman, the first African American, and the first Indian American to be elected Attorney General, Harris said,
"We'll see."
Harris is ready to work. She's already met with Warren Christopher, George Shultz, and civil rights attorney Constance Rice to make a smooth transition. Marilyn Medawar, Annenberg Radio News.
The DREAM Act would provide a path to citizenship for illegal immigrants who grew up in the United States and who go to college in the U.S. or serve in the military. About a dozen activists rallied at the offices of two local congressmen today in support of the bill. Our Rebecca Shonenkov was there.
Education, not deportation.
Education, not deportation.
A June Opinion Research poll found 70% of Americans are in favor of providing a path to citizenship for kids who grew up here. And so is Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff. In fact, he's a co-sponsor of the bill. So why were Samantha Contreras and other DREAM Act supporters rallying in front of his Pasadena office?
Well, for a long time, we've been working with his office for many years, and he continues to be on the fence on this issue. And so we're here today because we just want to make sure that if he says he supports, that he stands by his word and he votes yes on the DREAM Act.
Schiff's communications director, Maureen Shanahan, says he's not on the fence. He remains a co-sponsor of the bill. But activists aren't taking any yes vote for granted. This will be the last chance to pass the DREAM Act before Republicans unfriendly to the bill take the House back in January. The DREAM Act would affect up to 65,000 young men and women a year who graduate from American high schools after growing up here. Those are young men and women like Felipe Escobar.
So I feel all the students should have the same right, the opportunity that I have had, because I feel very lucky to have been given citizenship.
He says he's a full citizen now, and he would like the same privileges for those who've come after him. Escobar met with Schiff's district director while his fellow protesters held their banner for the few passing cars on Raymond Avenue. It was a much nicer reception than they got at Republican Congressman David Dreyer's San Dimas office just a couple of hours before.
And they said that they were too busy and they needed to answer phone calls.
Can you hear them now? Rebecca Schoenkopf, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight will be clear and brisk with lows in the upper 30s to mid 40s. Tomorrow will be warm up to the high 60s and mostly sunny. Later on Annenberg Radio News, a UCLA professor explains how 825,000 undocumented youths could generate up to $1.6 trillion in income. The classified documents publicly released by WikiLeaks last week caused upheaval between government officials. WikiLeaks is not saying who gave them the documents, but the government's prime suspect is Army PFC Bradley Manning, who is now being held in a maximum security prison. Our reporter Silva Selvion spoke to the UK ambassador to the US, Nigel Shinwald, and asked him how WikiLeaks will change public diplomacy.
One thing is clear, and I've got 35 years' experience of being a professional diplomat working for my country, is that diplomacy can't survive without confidentiality and without trust. You need that to be able to conduct relationships, get information, transact business together. And in that respect, diplomacy is no different from so many other branches of life. It doesn't mean that everything that we do is conducted in secret, because your government in the United States, my government in the UK, is accountable to the public. It explains itself day by day, often minute by minute.
I think it's the balance of like transparency and security. And certain things obviously are more sensitive when it comes to security, whereas others, I think the public feels like they have the right to know. And some people are applauding this gesture and claiming that it's heroic.
I don't myself think it's heroic. We've made clear as a government, we the UK government, make clear that we of course condemn the unauthorized release of confidential information like this. What difference will it make? Well, we have an extraordinarily close relationship with the United States. That relationship is essential for Britain's security, Britain's prosperity, Europe's security and prosperity. So nothing's going to affect that. But I think it's a sad day when information which is passed in confidence is divulged in this way.
I want to go back to 2008 when a memo of yours was leaked. Did anything positive come from that incident?
That was a memorandum which I wrote on the presidential election campaign, which was unfolding here, which was leaked by one of the British newspapers. But again, you know, that's what diplomats do. We're paid to provide those confidential assessments back to our governments of what's going on in the country in which we're working. And obviously, it's going to make it much more difficult for us to do that in the future if the stuff is going to appear in the newspapers word for word.
Hillary Clinton spoke earlier, wait until you hear what we've said about you. And it seems like in diplomatic circles, it goes without saying that some descriptions may not be the most flattering. And they are just cables. They are just memos. And so in terms of the impact, do you think this has changed the field, this leaking?
The way I read Secretary Clinton's statement today was that she was going to make rather major efforts to ensure that that American diplomatic cables are going to be protected properly in the future. And I think that's what governments have to do, while at the same time, as you were suggesting, making sure that, of course, our publics have got to understand what is going on in foreign policy. But it's not as though they need, there is an absolute requirement for people to know every single word that's conducted in private between diplomats.
Thank you so much for your time.
That's a pleasure. Nice to meet you.
The Migration Policy Institute of D.C. estimates that if the DREAM Act passes, 825,000 youths will pave their way to citizenship. As we reported earlier, the DREAM Act applies only to those who came here under the age of 16 and plan to pursue at least 2 years of higher education or military service. Dr. Raul Hinosa, a UCLA professor and director of the North American Integration and Development Center, found the estimated 825,000 legalized youths would generate between $1.4 and $1.6 trillion in income. I spoke with him earlier today about how he got those numbers.
We took a conservative estimate of what they would likely achieve in terms of education, and then after that, what type of jobs could they be getting and what that would contribute to the economy over the next 40 years. And on that basis, we calculated income taxes, sales taxes, all types of economic financial benefits, without taking into account the fact that many of them are also going to probably end up buying houses and businesses and creating more jobs in the rest of the society. So this is simply a very conservative version of what their income will be over the next 40 years.
Now, I was reading some arguments by the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank in Washington, D.C., that basically says the DREAM Act is actually going to give broader amnesty than the 2 million that are estimated as a possibility, because it's going to be used as a backdoor avenue by some students who get legal status and then try to bring more people in.
No, I don't believe that this is going to be a big backdoor. On the contrary, what we have seen from these various legalization programs in the past is that they end up having a lot less people actually apply that could apply. I think the key thing that we need to understand, these are people that have already gone through the educational system. They want to contribute to the society. Many of them are already in colleges, paying their own tuitions, working very hard to be able to make something of their lives. And it's completely logical. It's a no-brainer that we would want as many people as possible to be able to pay in to the Social Security and to the tax system and pay back. And if we keep them in the shadows right now, they will graduate and they will not be able to work. And then, so that entire contribution will not be able to be made for the benefit of the whole society and for the fiscal benefit of our budget deficits at the moment.
Well, thank you. That was Dr. Raul Hinosa, professor at UCLA and director of the North American Integration and Development Center. Now now we check in with Alexis Zotos from Annenberg TV News. She's going to tell us about the sad story of a USC student who passed away over Thanksgiving break. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Thanks. Okay, so last Wednesday night, DPS responded to a call on the sixth floor of Party. They took Rachel Kim, who's a freshman majoring in print journalism, to the hospital where she was pronounced dead. It's being handled right now by LAPD, and they do not have a cause of death yet. The LA County Coroner's Office has requested a toxicology report, and they don't think they will know back for several weeks.
Wow, thank you. We'll be sure to get the details in on that later tonight. Sure. Thanks for joining us. We've seen technology replace humans, at least to a certain degree. Think of your friends or kids playing on their iPhones rather than socializing at dinner. But a German designer has taken it to a new level. He's created a pillow meant to relieve loneliness. Stefan Ulrich invented the Functonide. It responds to touch by mimicking human-like movements such as breathing and cuddling. Ulrich told the UK Sun, if robots and objects can fulfill emotional needs as well, why do we need humans? Those on Twitter are asking, can't you just get a dog? You can see a video of how it works and more news from South Los Angeles on our website, annenbergradio.org. The USC and UCLA rivalry is on full display this week. The two schools meet at the Rose Bowl for the 80th time on Saturday. We spoke to Neon Tommy's sports reporter Chris Pizar for his take on what to expect. Check out that story and more on our website, www.annenbergradio.org. Well, this is our last newscast of the semester. It's also the last time I'll be your host. We want to thank our entire Tuesday staff. And to thank our staff for their hard work, we asked some of them to share their favorite holiday memories and traditions.
I'm Emily Frost, and my favorite holiday tradition starts on Christmas Eve when my family gives my brother and me each a pair of new pajamas that we sleep in. We go to bed, and they put more presents out that are supposed to be from Santa. So both of my brother and I are in our 20s, but we still pretend that Santa comes and he brings more presents.
My name is Stephanie Guzman. We had a holiday tradition that was actually quite horrifying. When I was younger, we had a little elf stuffed animal in our house, and he would go to different rooms, and every morning my brother and I would wake up and we'd go to find him. And I actually used to write letters to him, but little did I know that it was actually my mother who was writing me the letters. My mom eventually had to tell me because I was being bullied from it.
Rebecca Schoenkopf. When my son was a year and a half old, we would put his regular toys under the tree so it looked like he had many, many more gifts than we'd actually bought him. And we did the same thing for years until he must have been six, and he looked at it and said, that's all my stuff already. And I was sad because that wouldn't work any longer.
My name is Jessica Flores, and my favorite memory about Christmas is writing plays for my family to act out on Christmas Day. And I did this starting when I was 5 years old. And my first play was actually acting out the birth of Jesus Christ. So, of course, I was Mary. My cousin was Joseph. And Bart Simpson, the doll, was Jesus.
Our staff includes Esther Kong, Rebecca Schoenkopf, Emily Frost, Ariel Edwards-Levy, Stephanie Sherman, Shelley Hsu, Marilyn Medawar, and Ryan Nunez. Stephanie Guzman is our producer, Jessica Flores is the executive producer, and a special thanks to Willa Seidenberg, Karen Lowe, and Billy Higgins. Make sure to check out our next show. It's going to be this Thursday at 4 o'clock. And don't forget about us next year. O11 will be back Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4 p.m. And make sure to check out our sister organization later tonight, ATBN on Trojan Vision at 6 p.m. Thanks for listening. And that's it for this Tuesday. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Madeline Cinto. And check out our website, www.annenbergradio.org.